The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 2nd of October, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Lawrence Reed, Chief Executive Officer of Bezant Resources. BZT is the ticker there. And Lawrence provides an update on their Mankayan copper gold assets in the Philippines. Also on the podcast, I have James Kelly, non-executive chairman of Trident Resources, TRR is the ticker there, newly listed yesterday, and James discusses their background and strategy in order to find an acquisition, a company or asset in the mining or metal sector. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand and Communications, talks about the following companies: Salt Lake Potash, SO4, Vast Resources, VST, ECR Minerals, ECR, and Fairfax, that's FFX. And as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. And you can see that on the homepage at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Reed, Chief Executive Officer of Bezant Resources. BZT is the ticker there. Lawrence, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Thanks.
Because I know you're not in this country. Where are you at the moment?
I'm in Manila. I'm actually in the Philippines right now.
Okay.
So we're about to go on to site at the Mankayan project tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
Going back there for a site visit.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, listen, before we get into the news which you've announced, which is a block model analysis at the Mankayan project in the Philippines, before we get into that, for people not familiar with sort of Bezant Resources, can you summarise what it's about, please, Lawrence?
Well, fundamentally, what we're doing is focusing on copper gold. The board believes that copper gold is going to be the real cornerstone metal. I mean, it already is, I suppose, in many senses, iron ore more so. But with battery technology, copper is the metal everyone needs, and most of the world's copper mines need to be, well, replaced, to be honest. So we're a small company. We undertook a radical change at the beginning of this year and sold our platinum assets and refocused on our copper portfolio. The main asset is highly economic, big project, porphyry project, Mankayan in the Philippines. And we also have a project, Eureka, in Argentina.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I was talking on the weekend podcast with a couple of mates, and I said, if you only had one commodity you had to be in and no other commodity over the next 10, 20 years, it would have to be copper, wouldn't it?
I think so, yeah. If you look, the thing that interests me is I started doing some conferences at the beginning of the year. I decided it was time to actually listen to some experts and listen to what the industry was talking about. And more people were talking about copper as the battery technology. And then the thing that really convinced me, and I was pretty convinced anyway that copper was the place to be, was when you suddenly started seeing the majors announcing in their results for their production upcasts. If you looked on my LinkedIn, all that sort of thing, I highlight this stuff. So that suddenly copper becomes the battery technology. Yeah. And that's really interesting for me because it is the bedrock metal, and the supply stats look appalling.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. And so every project of certain sizes is going to be looked at, surely, by bigger companies. I suppose you have a very interesting asset on your hand there because, like I said, you are a sub-4 million market cap company, but you've got an asset there that has a post-tax NPV of around $740 million, which is massive, isn't it?
It is. It's. I mean, copper projects, what do you need as a copper project for somebody to co-develop with you or to able to get this into production, near a production of a scale which is actually going to be important? And for us, it's all about the costs and all about the metrics that you can see in this fly-through. Now, if I take a step back for a moment, Justin, what this fly-through is about, and, you know, I was sitting here last week thinking, well, when we put this out, people might just say, well, they've just been doing a video. But really, it's the culmination of bringing a whole new load of consultants on site, a whole different range of skills and varieties of people going back back to site first thing tomorrow morning and going through all the data, and also listening to people in the market, industrial groups, about what they want to see and how they want information presented. So it's been about increasing our understanding of this project and actually understanding how the next level of data that we need to be presenting to key stakeholders as we move this towards feasibility.
Yeah, well, explain what's happened. So today, the RNS block model analysis, for people not, you know, au fait with what that means, what does it mean? So a block model, what is that, and what are you doing? And like I say, you've done this video, it's a 3D kind of video, looking at the whole concept there. So what's the point of it? Who's it for?
Yeah, I suppose in a sense the video is the misnomer part. In a sense, it's the 3D model which we've taken and we've created based on all the reports that have been commissioned and undertaken by people like Snowden, TWP, Mining Sense over the years, culminating all that data together and putting it into a centralized model, if you like. So to be honest, the reason we've released this today is we're using this model in lots of very interesting ways, and after some internal discussions, we decided that the best thing is that if this is actually a public document in the public domain, because frankly it gives us a bit more freedom about how we use it externally. So rather than keep it to ourselves and you know, pointlessly, in my view, I wanted to make this document, or make this model public. Sorry, a bit sleepy, Justin, apologies, and get it out in the domain so we don't have to mess around with endless CAs for what I see as this is the overview of the project, because this is about how it works. How is this actually going to work, and what does it look like? You know, for me, what really brought it out was when you look at, have you seen the bit where we go down in grade and up in grade?
Yeah.
I mean, for me, that makes it. And then you look at how Lift 1 is actually going to work as well. And you start piecing together the economics on this, admittedly at scoping study stage. You suddenly think, yes, copper is about scale, but it's also about sustainable OPEX. And that's what makes this project really exciting. That's the interesting thing about this project, is the sustainable OPEX numbers.
Yeah, go on.
And frankly, we're doing lots more work internally at the moment, and talking about how this can be approached and having a listening to people into the market about how it can be done. But the economics of this thing will make it. Not necessarily the size. It's big and it's got a long line life, but what really makes this project is the potential operating costs. So I'll shut up now.
Yeah, no, but you know, like I said, it's a big, you know, it's a big project, and like I said, for a tiny, it's for a micro cap. You obviously need to get that OPEX and CAPEX there. You obviously need to look for a partner in some way, I assume, or even, I know it was up for sale or nearly sold in 2014, where $70 million was the price tag. That was before, you know, governments started banning petrol and diesel and going in favour of the EV revolution, which of course plays into copper's favour. But so what's happening now? I mean, have you put this together because someone's interested or looking at it, or are you just putting it out there, see who's interested, or what's happening?
Well, we can't talk too much of the detail, but certainly we're putting together a document to increase our own internal understanding, and we want to be talking about this project a lot more now. This process, and there's going to be a few more things that we're going to be doing over the next month or so, has been about really nailing down our complete understanding of mankind and where we are now. So this allows us to talk to all manner of groups. So yeah, 4 million market cap going out to raise project finance and equity just ain't going to happen. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, we've got the rights to this license. You know, we've got a wealth of engineering experience. You know, we're going to be learning lots of interesting things over the next week or two in the Philippines. And we think there's lots of interesting stuff. And if you get towards the end of the video, and we're using AMS. Obviously, I work with on another project and another company, but we use, if you have a look at, they've done something really interesting when showing all of the drill core that ends in mineralization, and that's just fascinating. So we're using that type of thing to just look at the sheer size of it and the potential of it, and you know, holes in the middle of the resource, because while it's big, but while it's not up to the big porphyry scales, it's got a lot of questions still to be asked in terms of the sheer scale of it, and the economics again are highly attractive. Underground quarry, it's comparatively simple and straightforward. I mean, nothing is in mining, but you know, it's there we are.
So I don't know if you can answer the question. So have you had anyone sort of interested in it at all, looking at it, asking about it? Because complicate things a bit further. I know Philippines has had a bit of a reputation with the president of late, but are people interested in it?
We're talking to people all the time. We have had discussions. I mean, I'll just give you a direct answer. I mean, somebody a couple of months ago said, you know, if this was somewhere else with a bit less, fewer political questions, it would already be in mine.
Yeah.
So we're working on a number of things. Just obviously you've got Metals X, and they successfully got their conversion licenses through. We're working on a few things this week as well, just to try and start explaining the structure of law in the Philippines and the processes that need to be gone through to get into development. Yeah. And one of the issues we're facing is that there's been a lot of questionable open pit mining in the Philippines, which has done environmental damage, and quite rightly they're being targeted for shutdown, but what we are is we're underground, contained, so we're something quite different. But you know, there's no point whinging about it. Our job is to pick this political risk issue apart, identify what the real risks are, but also to explain the process is involved, because what we're also finding is a lot of people don't quite understand how the Philippines goes from A to B, if you like, in terms of mining, and that's our fault. We need to deal with that, so that's what we're doing.
Yeah, but it seems like that you know, President Duarte is down on environmentally unfriendly mining, like open pit or illegal mining, but like you said, there are, you know, operating mines in the Philippines, aren't there? Is it one called the Atlas mine? Is that right?
There are many operating mines, licensed and permitted, and this will only be a mine that can be brought into production through permitting and licensing.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting to look at some of the operating mines in the Philippines. There's a number of companies, you know, there's a good massive level of mining knowledge, proper professional mining knowledge in this company is extraordinarily impressive. But we just need to work a bit harder at present, getting that message out there and just talking in detail in a really boring way about how Philippines and the mining sector work, what are the genuine risks that we've identified in terms of developing this into mine. But the sheer opportunity of it, there aren't many projects like this. And the more I look at it, the more I look at it on a comparative basis, when you look at similar projects and their mining methods, the more I'm convinced this is absolutely what we should be doing. The fact that we've got this project with a market cap of sub 10 million is actually an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the thing. People say they're risking in Philippines. It's not the kind of risk you see in other countries where, you know, assets have been nationalised. It's not that kind of risk. All he's worried about is environment concerns, which is fine. I think it's well-placed. So as long as you adhere to the, you know, I don't know if I, obviously I'm sounding pretty naive here, but as long as you adhere to those environmental laws and standards that they're putting out there in Philippines, it seems like there's not that much risk, is there, really? I mean, it's not as if, you know, the assets can be taken off you, like other, like in parts of Africa or certain places we've seen. It's not that kind of risk, is it?
Yes and no. I'd love to just say, yeah, you're absolutely right, Justin, but I'm going to be you're right to a point, but there is also absolutely that the primary point you're correct is that environmentally damaging mines, mine which aren't property permitted and licensing an issue. There's also the issue about the process and continuation of conversion of licenses. Now, I can pretend that that's not the case, but that would be wrong. And that's one of the things that we're going to be explaining and going through. So how do you actually license these projects through, especially when we're talking to overseas groups? Because that's the question we get from overseas groups. Okay, it's been done, absolutely, but it is not simple. Okay. So that frankly, is going to, and that's going to be the subject of a new bit of work that we're working on right at this moment in time, is to start talking about that and hitting that head on and saying, this is the process, this is how the conversion works, and this is how we can get to A to B.
Yeah, okay, excellent stuff. But just one other thing, I mean, there was obviously a bit more confidence in the project in May, I suppose, when they had the renewal of the PSA expiration period. Is that right or not?
Yeah, and that was a major thing. The fact that it was renewed in the process we went through to renew it again gave us a lot of positive. It gave us a big positive start about what we can do with this. And we're talking to people all the time in terms of what could happen with this project. But I think I'll just leave it there, if that's all right, Justin.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
We've got the right people, I think, talking to the right relevant groups and listening to what needs happen. I mean, I don't want to preempt, but you know, we'll probably put some news out, some of the things we're doing very directly on the ground with local stakeholders as well. But what I can say is we're fully back on to talking to key local groups and groups at every single stage in the Philippines, because it will only work with the support of those stakeholders of government, communities, etc.
Yeah.
But this is an interesting project, and done well and in a sustainable manner, it can be the type of cornerstone project that supplies a company with consistent levels of copper and gold with quite an attractive, I mean, that's the other interesting thing on Lift 1, payback initially. So yes, it is. Well, we'll put some more news out on that, but that's really interesting. I think that's certainly one of the things Colin thinks is fantastic about this project, is you actually look at the metrics laid down into what this can deliver for whoever brings it into production. Not over 50 years, but over the first 5 to 10 years, that becomes really interesting.
Yeah,
because it's not just the case that you're just going to have to disclose a huge amount of money and then you're just in an average grade straight away, or you need to mine into the good stuff, if you like.
Okay, well, one final thing, Lawrence, you know all about this. If someone's listening to this and likes the sound of it, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
And you've got significant copper gold porphyry with a grade level in copper gold, which is highly competitive. So you've got one of the few projects of its size that's actually sitting outside of a major or a vertically integrated group at this time. And then I think we're looking carefully, but we're hopefully going to be doing some of the work for you shortly. But we're having a look at operating comparators, especially on the base of Lift 1, which is about 700 meters below surface. But if you go in and you look at the total all-in costs and you start comparing it to other mining companies, suddenly it becomes extremely interesting. Political risk is one of the things that we have to talk about and we have to convey, but as a project, it should already be a mine, frankly.
Marvellous stuff, Lawrence, good to chat to you, and like I say, doing lots of work out there, so hopefully we'll chat again after another update in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
That's great. Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is James Kelly, non-executive chairman of Trident Resources. That's TRR ticker. James, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. Good to meet you, and thanks a lot for having me on.
Yeah, well, you're newly listed, so normally I do say some people may not be aware of the company, but I assume quite a lot of people are not aware of the company. So first and foremost, James, give us a quick summary. What's Trident all about, please?
So, yeah, as you say, we listed this week, and Trident's a mining acquisition vehicle. We're backed by institutional investors. We're looking to acquire a mining asset, one where we feel we can add value or unlock significant value, or indeed one where we believe value has been overlooked. We formed the company earlier this year, and we raised £4 million this week from an array of institutional investors, including some of the leading natural resource investors in the world. And I think this is important as it gives us confidence that we have the firepower to execute on a transaction. And also it makes us attractive to potential vendors of assets and the owners of private assets.
Yeah. OK, well, let's dig into who Trident is. So yourself and some other players, who's behind it?
Okay, so the founders have a significant background in mining and mining finance. So myself, I was a senior member of the corporate development team at Xstrata for many years. And after that, I was part of the team that founded Greenstone Resources, which is a mining-focused private equity firm. So over the course of my career, I've been involved in a multitude of mining transactions. At Xstrata, I saw the full range of transactions from small earn-ins to bolt-ons to our existing businesses, all the way through to the mega deals, such as when we sold the business to Glencore. After that at Greenstone, the focus was slightly different in that we were taking significant positions in companies rather than full control. But the fundamental premise remained the same, which was, you know, we were looking to identify and create value. So some of the notable transactions that I've worked on at Greenstone included an investment in Excelsior Mining, which is a very interesting in-situ copper leaching project in the US, Orbis Gold, which was a Burkina Faso gold project, which actually was subsequently acquired by Semaphore at a big premium to where we were investing. And then Avanco, which was a Brazilian copper gold project, which we brought into production and then was latterly acquired by Oz Minerals for about $400 million Australian. And so, you know, having worked at a company like Xstrata, I've worked across a variety of commodities, all the base metals, copper, zinc, nickel, as well as gold, other precious metals, and also bulks, iron ore and coal. And over and above that, I've also worked in a lot of countries, so I've had experience of how different jurisdictions operate. And in fact, I think I've worked on an acquisition in pretty much every continent, although it's fair to say most of my work's been done in Africa, South America and Australia. But it's not just about the board of directors. It's also about our team of advisors. And I'm very pleased that we've got such a strong team of advisors. Here in London, we have Tamasis Partners. And then out in Asia and Australia, we have Azure Capital and Ashanti Capital, all of whom are bespoke mining-focused advisors and brokers. And I think they bring a lot and have a lot to offer us. Firstly, they've been involved in a large number of mining finance transactions, and so they are well-equipped to help us execute whatever transaction we wish. In addition, their networks ensure that we cover all of the world's major resources centres from which we should be able to solicit the best opportunities, raise further capital on good terms, and also execute transactions. So overall, you know, the collective breadth of the experience and skills that we've assembled gives me confidence that we have the team to deliver our strategy. And that strategy is to identify the right asset and to build a meaningful mining and metals business.
Yeah, you seem like you've... I got more than a handful of experience there, James. So you've raised $4 million. So let's have a look at this sort of delve in. Obviously, you can't reveal too much at the moment, but let's have a look at what kind of assets you're looking at. So are they going to be sort of, you know, where they are, sort of exploration or the production or what?
Yeah, and look, we've got a pretty broad remit, but clearly, you know, we have got a focus and a preference for certain types of assets. So the assets that we're really looking for, first of all, in terms of commodities, we're looking at commodities that are attractive to mainstream institutional and retail investors. And so I would describe that as the base metals. So copper, zinc, nickel, precious metals, particularly gold, and also, you know, given the fundamental demand outlook, also battery-related metals. I think there's an important piece here to the commodities that we look at, which is, you know, any project has to be financeable. If were we to be looking at coal and iron ore, a lot of those projects require huge capital investment, and sometimes that can be challenging for a junior mining company to raise. So we're looking for assets that are attractive from a value perspective, but also ones that we can deliver and bring into production ourselves. Mm-hmm. So in terms of stage of opportunities and how we see value unfolding, our preference is for more advanced mining opportunities, so ideally assets that are at a feasibility stage or even producing assets.
Okay.
And that being said, I mean, I think the one thing we're always looking for is assets where we feel we can add or unlock significant value. And if I can just give you a few examples of how that might manifest itself. So, you know, exploration, whilst we wouldn't look at, typically wouldn't look at pure greenfield exploration, you know, there may well be opportunities where there's an existing resource and we can provide funding for a drill program to expand that resource and change the dynamic of that asset, make it more attractive, whether it's becomes a larger operation, whether it can become a more attractive because it's a higher grade operation. Asset development, this may, again, may come in various forms. That could be the funding of a study, so taking it up the development curve by funding a pre-feasibility or a feasibility study. Or it may be that actually we provide the construction capital and bring that into production.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So quite, I mean, obviously specific, but as far as, I mean, jurisdictions, I mean, are you tied to one area, one continent, or anywhere, or what?
No, not at all. We do have a global remit. I mean, I think there are, I think there are jurisdictions that we would avoid. You know, I've done a lot of work in my career in some of the more challenging jurisdictions from a geopolitical perspective, and I think we'd be steering away from those. And I think the jurisdictions we'd be looking at would be ones that are suitable and attractive for institutional investors and also the retail market. But you've got to balance that with the attractiveness of the geology. So it's a fine balance. We will look everywhere. I think we see a lot of opportunities in Africa. I think Europe's interesting, the sort of resurgence of the European mining sector, and there are always opportunities that arise in the Americas and Australia. I do think one of the things that's interesting about the industry at the moment is that there are opportunities that fall sort of within unloved assets that may be held by the majors or even mid-tier companies that no longer fit with their current owners. And that may be because they're deemed subscale, or it might be that they've just got the wrong cost profile as a mid-tier tries to upscale its project. Its cost profile and its overall portfolio. And in my experience, often those assets become quite attractive to a new owner, a fresh pair of eyes, a different way of looking at an asset and sort of the ability to sort of unlock hidden value.
Yeah. Okay. But, I mean, so you're quite open-minded at the moment, but is there a commodity at the moment, do you think, you know, but if you're looking over projects and you see a certain commodity, you think, oh, that's what we're after, that kind of, I mean, what are the kind of hot commodities in your mind?
Yeah, I think if I was to pick one, it would probably be copper. And that's probably, you know, it's a relatively boring choice in some respects.
I don't think it is, because I'm an investor. I've been looking at all kinds of commodities and looking to get exposure to the EV revolution, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I've got a little bit of exposure to lithium and cobalt and graphite, but it all comes back to copper, doesn't it? When you look at it, everything comes back to copper, and I think that will, if you had to have just exposure to one commodity, then it would be copper, wouldn't it, over the next 5-10 years?
For me, it would be. I think what's, you know, copper has always been a sort of such a key industrial metal. As you rightly point out, it's been used for so many years, has so many industrial applications, and it runs through so many of our products and life. And latterly, with the sort of the EV revolution, it's had an additional demand driver there. But it's not all about the demand side, actually. And I think this does cut across the industry.
Yeah.
Generally, but certainly for certain commodities, you know, there is a real supply lag. You know, you look back through the financial crisis, and the capital has not been deployed to bring on new projects to keep pace with demand. So, yeah, I mean, for me, copper, I think, is very, very interesting, as long as it's the right asset that you find. You know, I think there are some definite attractive commodities and opportunities within the EV space, but I think one has to be quite careful not to get swept up in an overall froth of new commodities. And yeah, I think you have to be quite selective in the quality of those assets as they come on.
Okay. Well, and I suppose it comes down to, you know, why now? Is the timing right now, and why do you think it is?
Yeah, look, I'm personally quite excited about the timing for Trident listing. I do think it's a great time to be looking for opportunities, because we all know the mining industry is cyclical, and it's been a pretty tumultuous time since the financial crisis, well, nearly 10 years ago now. In fact, you know, if we look back at the height of that crisis, even some of the largest mining companies in the world were in serious financial trouble. And this precipitated the industry undergoing a period of significant restructuring. Many of the major mining companies were selling assets to repair their debt-laden balance sheets. And a second reaction to that was many of the companies largely shelved development projects and curtailed exploration work. Mm-hmm. But so what I think is interesting is that whilst, you know, demand has been improving for most metals, I mean, clearly some more than others, but it's been improving over the last 2 years or so, we've not really seen a commensurate increase in development capital for new projects from both mid-tiers and major mining companies. So put simply, mining companies haven't been investing sufficiently in exploration and development, which means that, you know, resources and mines that are depleting are just not being replenished sufficiently to meet demand, existing demand and growing demand. Mm-hmm. So when you put this under investment in supply together with a robust demand side, we believe that the outlook for commodities is positive. But more importantly, we believe there'll be increasing competition for good quality projects and assets. Okay. So if I bring that back to Trident, look, we believe that Trident as a mining acquisition vehicle has got, you know, access to deep pools of institutional capital, and we're really well placed to secure some high quality assets and create a new mid-tier mining company.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, James, one final thing to do. If someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing and your experience and where you're headed, but are not yet following the company, which it wouldn't be a surprise because you're brand new listed, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay. So I suppose, first of all, look, it is a difficult market out there. And so we've secured high quality institutional support for a new mining acquisition vehicle. And we intend to turn it into a mid-tier mining company. I think that's quite exciting. Secondly, in an M&A situation, typically a vehicle such as ours would trade at a good premium to its cash balance. And Trident is a very clean, strongly funded vehicle with institutional backing. So compared to other acquisition vehicles, we think that premium should be enhanced. Mm-hmm. And I guess finally, you know, we have a highly experienced board, advisor team, and cornerstone investor group, which I believe will ensure we successfully identify and execute value-creating acquisitions.
Marvellous stuff. James, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Fabulous. Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're all
right, very good morning from a chilly Seaford. Indeed, yeah. I am, Jess. How are you?
Yes, good. Winter's creeping in, or autumn winter's creeping in, is it, slowly in the nights and in the mornings. But it's still, you know, still quite fine throughout the day. I quite like that, you know. So
The weather conditions seem quite benign. It's a bit more overcast today, but I think overall for the rest of the week, we're just going to get sort of, you know, this sun and cloud, gentle weather conditions that we've seen, which that's fine. You know, it's as long as it carries on, doesn't get too cold. But I'm sure, you know, as we run up to Guy Fawkes night, which is going to be along in just over a month, it will get a lot colder. So anyway, yeah,
my kids are more into Halloween now. They love that, you know. They love that.
Oh,
stuff.
Yeah.
But, they're dressing up and trying to be scary and all that nonsense. But I can't stand it. Anyway, let's. Yeah, of course, I did think I was a little kid, but I said some of the things my kids love. So I have the direct opposite effect. I hate what the kind of stuff they like. But there we are.
Well, it's a very it's a very American thing, isn't it? You know, and they the kids are influenced obviously by you know the TV. So the American box TV sets where everyone celebrates Halloween. It's the biggest night of the year, and it is a yeah.
Do you know why? I know why Americans celebrate it. It's because the possibility of merchandising and earning a good buck is far greater. You know, fireworks, all you got is fireworks. And perhaps health and safety laws are probably a little more expensive. But with Halloween, you can get some cheap tat, knock it up into a little costume and sell it. And the margins are probably very good on that. So it's based on the dollar, isn't it? It's based on turning a buck. And it's almost like the British, you know... the British's ability to cash in on a traditional sort of festival compared to the Americans, as we know, America is very good at business, but they've certainly cashed in on that, and they've seen there's plenty of buck there. Let's celebrate. Let's promote. There's plenty of money to be earned.
I saw the other day actually somebody was planning for the trick or treat visits where rather than having sweets, they're going to have little bags of lettuce and salad.
I saw that there was Dole, wasn't there? The company was Dole. It was like little mini salads, yes, with a Halloween logo and a pumpkin on the front, and it looks like a sweet bag. And you know, the kids has got a little bit of salad inside it. That's excellent. I'll be giving
that's
those.
Really good.
Yeah. Cool.
Healthy trick or treat.
Anyway. Let's not get too carried away. Our stocks are in the doldrums a little bit. So let's have a look. What are we chatting about? What's the first stock?
Okay, we talked about this recently. Going to talk about it again because there was a big MOU signed today. Salt Lake Potash, Epicode SO4. I'm just going to give a very quick overview. It's the most sustainable fertilizer and salt lake and potash project in the world. There are nine lakes called the Goldfield Salt Lake projects in Western Australia, and there are it's about 3,500 square kilometers. They're huge assets, close to major mining centers. Good rail links, good road links to get the stuff out. But the great thing is, it doesn't rain very often down there, obviously. But when it does, the surface is rejuvenated. So they literally scrape the stuff off the surface. They put it into the tanks, and they produce sulfate of potash, for which there is a much bigger market than potash. And I mention that because. The various groups that have done research and undertaken research on Salt Lake, Align Research put out a buy note earlier this year with a 132 pence price target versus the 25 pence where the company is currently trading at. The company has institutional support. Lombard Odier increased their stake from 15.5 million to 17 million, 8.7 to 9.7% back in June, and they're still holders in the company. And the company is estimated that it will start producing revenues in just over a year's time. That's $288
$288, that's a lot.
No, $288 million.
I was going to say, wow, yeah, impressive.
Yeah, $288 million. I can't read my own writing here. In 2020, but there's a comparison here. We've got to look at the actual market. The market for sulfate of potash is about four to five times the size of the potash market. The Salt Lake Potash have already signed take-off agreements with Mitsubishi Australia, which is obviously you can't get much bigger than that. They also have a memorandum of understanding with one of the lake projects with Australian Potash, and they've today announced an offtake agreement for offtake rights for up to 50% of all sulfate of potash production from the entire project with Sinofert of China, and Sinofert is a huge company. So the progress the company's made is huge. The takeoff agreements are there. The company's going to start producing in 2020. It's actually going to start earning cash from the operations in 2020, and yet it's sitting there with a 47 million market cap. This is in comparison.
So when are they going to start generating revenue? You said again. When do they expect to?
2020.
So, okay. And that's $770 a year. Yeah.
That's $288 million a year.
Oh, yeah. $288 million. Cool. Yeah. Okay. That's
okay. So this is a company that's near to production, and I just mentioned this comparison. Salt Lake compared, say, to Sirius Minerals, which has a market cap of $1.3 billion, and it has a market that's. It's about a quarter of the size, because it's Sirius Minerals are producing polyhalite, not the pure sulfate of potash, which is the higher grade product for it, which there's a much bigger market. It's producing polyhalite, and the marketplace for that particular product is much smaller. And I just think either Sirius Minerals is massively overvalued, which it could be argued that it is, or Salt Lake Potash is massively undervalued. Either way,
or a bit of both, and then
or
in
a
the
bit
middle.
Of both. Yeah. Either way, the share price of one will probably come down, but the share price of the other, in this case Salt Lake Potash, I think should be much, much higher where it is now. And the align note I'm talking about was much earlier this year, with a 132 pence price target, just based on the projects then, and that was before two of the MOUs that are now in place were announced. So. I'm in this company. I'm invested in this company. I hold shares in this company, and I see, you know, the production process, the situation where the lakes are sited, the strategic location of the lakes. It just adds up to a very good investment proposition for me. And I think right now it's massively undervalued. Someone else might come back and argue otherwise, but I think you've got to look at the big player in the market, which is Sirius Minerals, to gain that comparison.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. SO4, extra stuff. What's next, Al?
Okay, you interviewed the CEO of this company a few weeks ago, Andrew Prelia from Vast Resources.
I did, yes.
VAST, of course, is the epic code. The shares have been as high as 0.79p, as low as 0.29p, market cap of 33 million. And this is a company with, it has a range of mining investments and mining operations, both in Romania and primarily in Romania and Zimbabwe. Romania has got what is termed as a polymetallic prospectivity project in Blueberry, which it owns 29% of. And the company, in fact, that operates that EMA Resources could IPO separately at some point in the not too distant future. It has Manela, which is already producing copper, zinc, some gold and silver, 11-year mine life there. Jorg Resource estimates of 4.6 million tons of combined produce from the mine, and the open pit mine is 1.1 million tons, and there's also the company also looking at opening up the Kali Baba mine region, which is adjacent to Manela. The company's undergone some problems with the Bada Play mine, which is also in Romania, has an 80% interest in the mine, 1.8 million tons, and there have been a number of delays over the past year with getting the mine sort of operational. But the company is in the process of resolving that, and it is expected, Romania operations overall are expected to become cash generative in the coming years. So that's a big step forward. The company announced final results last week. I should just say as well, the company, the second set of operation for Argonda results is in Zimbabwe, where it has the Eureka gold mine. It owns 23% of that mine, and the Eureka gold mine is an historic mine. Production was stopped some years ago when the price of gold was low, and it became unprofitable to continue with it. That's now going to be restarted. It has the PBGM, the Pickstone Peerless mine, where there's a JORC resource estimate of 62 million tons and 3.5 million tons of or 3.5 million ounces of gold. The giant gold mine, which is also in Zimbabwe due to be restarted, and there's a joint venture announced recently with Red Mercury, which is for the Morange diamond fields. And again, there's, you know, the company are very excited about this going forward. So there's a whole range of projects, hence the name Vast Resources. The company announced its finals last week. It prior to that raised 863,000 sterling for funding and operations going forward. It also announced a 29% increase in revenues and turned a loss of 1.6 million last year into a profit, and it's got cash of $1.5 million dollars at the bank. Huge amounts of trading volume yesterday in the company, I think there are great expectations for the company going forward into the new year. But with that spread of risk and the spread of operations, I think if you take a look at the chart, as you can see with the chart, it doesn't sort of oscillate as much as some of the other junior mining stocks do. And you know, the prospects for cash generation from Romania, and also the Pixstone Peerless gold mine is increasing processing capacity into the new year. So there's a lot of stuff, I think, to look forward to as Vast Resources heads into 2019.
Marvellous. Of course, VAST is a ticker there. And anything else you can add, Al?
Yeah, just on still with mining, still with gold mining, just want to pick up ECR Minerals, Epicode ECR. This is, of course, Craig Brown, that we've spoken about the company a number of times over the past week. Last Friday, the ECR announced that they'd produced the first set of assay results from the rock chip sampling at the Bayliston Gold Project in Victoria. There's a number of projects being operated in the Victoria region of Australia. That's Bayliston, Maunville, the Blue Moon project, of course. They took 76 rock chip samples. 22 of those samples contained gold mineralization with grades ranging from 0.5 gram per ton to 67 grams per ton, which is pretty good. So they're definitely onto something. There's a lot more to do and review in the area. But whereas beforehand we were just looking at a prospective region with an historical precedent for producing gold, now we've confirmed that there's gold mineralization there, and obviously the project economics have taken a step forward in that regard. So exciting stuff there from ECR Minerals.
Yeah, but there's a release out today, actually. They've just come out about an iceberg gold project.
The iceberg gold project.
Yeah, on the 3rd of August, the company announced an option agreement in respect to the iceberg gold project. The original option agreement provided a 60-day option period during which due diligence work could be undertaken. They've appointed CSI Global Mining Industry. What's this? They recognise that both parties agreed to extend the option by 30 days, so at no additional cost. They're extending that option. Okay, cool.
Good. Well, that's also in the same region too. So clearly, that's great news. Actually, I'd not seen that
you should get your Vox Markets app there, Al. It'll send you exactly straight to the front screen of your phone.
Well, exactly, but I switched the phone off just so...
Oh, good. That's professional. Actually, I haven't. I'm not professional. I'm not switching my
phone. So there you go.
Cool. So, you got one up on me there. All right, anything else, Al?
Yeah, I want to talk about Vector Vespic from last week. This is a company that many people will know about. It's a company called FairFX Group. FFX is the epicode. It classes itself as a leading challenger brand in banking payments, and basically provides payment apps that are used around the world. It's available through over 30 million merchants and 1 million ATMs across a broad range of companies, and of course via mobile apps, the internet, and so on.
I've had Ian actually in Stratford Taylor.
In Stratford Taylor,
he's
that's
been
right.
On the podcast a few times actually, in previous, not for a while though, but he has been on the podcast.
Well, this is an interesting point to look at this. I mean, the FairFX was picked up initially by VectorVest metrics, and there was a series of metrics: relative value, relative timing, master metric, the VectorVest master metric, the growth earnings or earnings growth, a number of factors. The relative value flag alerted members in, well, as far back as September last year, in fact, over a year ago. It's scaled on between 0 and 2, and it pushed above 1 at that point, which sent the flag out to members, and remained well above 1 since that time. And it logs it today at 1.7, which is exceptional on the Vetevest metric board. Earnings growth at a 48%, which again is very good. And this is largely based on the set of interim results that Fairfax announced on July 6th. Where it said report a very strong first half. It recently acquired Cardone Banking and City Forex reported a 146% increase in turnover to 1.1 billion, which was in line with expectations. And Ian Stratford Taylor said at the time that the fact that the substantial growth in turnover has been achieved without reduced margins, which is quite something when you integrate two acquisitions, gives us great confidence for 2018 and beyond. So, Vetevest initially picked this up it was well below a pound, trading at 140 pence today. It's still some way below the current Vetevest valuation of 183 pence. So there's still an awful long way to go. And I think given the progress that Ian has made with the company, and certainly backed by a very strong charting formation too, there's an awful lot more to come from this company.
Marvellous stuff. Thanks, Al. And have a nice week. And we'll speak next week, fella.
You two just speak next week. Thanks.
Okay, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Armadale's Capital. That's ACP, not Armadale's, Armadale. At 4, Europa Metals, EUZ. At 3, Angus Energy, ANGS. At 2, Rockrose Energy. Let me just check there. Let's see, yes. That's RRE, of course. And number one most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours is Clontarf Energy. CLON is the ticker there. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs are as follows. And they are at 5, Rockrose Energy, completion of Dias acquisition. At 4, Angus Energy, holdings and company. At 3, Infrastrata, disposal of legacy hydrocarbon exploration interests. At 2, Vesarin, completion of acquisition of Nanomat. And number one most liked RNS came from Angus Energy. That's Balcombe Field Well Test Result. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.